Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, my name is Mike DeBarry on behalf of Education Defend on Blog Talk Radio. I'm here today with Jim Ray, who is a New York City school teacher and is writing a book called Out of Time Teacher about his situation as a teacher at John Adams High School. Welcome, Jim. And you know, by the way, I want to also remind everybody, this is the first of maybe two or three interviews. Okay? Let's do this again then. Welcome, Jim.
Thank you, Mike. I actually wish I didn't have to be here.
Well, from reading chapter one on your blog, it would appear that you feel that a mistake has been made.
Yes, absolutely, in my case, and actually in the case of many others, yes.
Okay, can you explain to the listeners and what had happened at John Adams?
Well, John Adams was designated a renewal school along with many other schools in New York City. It's a title given to schools that didn't have the desired data, among those factors being graduation rates, attendance, region's passing scores, et cetera. In the case of John Adams and five other schools, we were required to interview for our jobs in order to be rehired for the upcoming school year.
Wow. Now, were all renewal schools required to do this, Jim?
No, actually, they weren't. In fact, I was speaking to someone at another school that was designated as a renewal school, and they weren't required to do it. And the person that told me that acknowledged that his school's data wasn't as good as John Adams, which was kind of strange. Now, when I asked him how that could be, he replied, "We have better political connections."
Wow.
Now, if that is the case, this certainly was not a fair and pure process. But, you know, anyone involved in it knows that it certainly was not fair and it was anything but pure.
So who decided that the teachers at John Adams would have to go through these interviews?
Well, politicians. Politicians that certainly didn't spend any time at John Adams, you know, what they invariably do is they come up with solutions that are motivated more by what they think the public will applaud rather than what makes common sense. Unfortunately, it has become fashionable to blame teachers for all the problems and everything that is wrong at these schools.
Mm-hmm.
The media feeds into it. They keep writing and reporting about all the bad teachers that exist at these challenged schools. And if that's all the public hears, that's what they're going to believe.
Hmm.
Now, they never cite any other socioeconomic factors or inherent dysfunctions at the school itself. The politicians, basically, what they do is they fly over these schools, they carpet bomb them with bad decisions and policies,
mm-hmm.
and then they continue on their merry way. Meanwhile, the people on the ground are the ones that have to deal with the residual destruction.
Hmm. So essentially what you're saying is that the teachers are not the problem.
Well, listen, you go to any school in New York City, you're going to have a certain percentage of bad teachers. There isn't a higher percentage, say, at a so-called bad school. All right. Had they come in and made a real objective evaluation of the problems that exist at John Adams, there's no way they would have determined that the number of so-called bad teachers was as high as they would have imagined. In fact, they would have determined that it was far less. All right.
Mm-hmm.
But that would have created a dilemma for them.
And how's that?
Well, if you go for years blaming the teachers and then you do an in-depth study, you're going to come out and find out, well, you know, the teachers really aren't the problem. But you've been saying it as a politician for years that they are. All right. So are politicians going to admit that they were wrong all along? So, you know, it stands to reason that they're going to come up with a predetermined number of teachers that would not be rehired just to make the whole process look as if it's legitimate.
Yeah.
All right. Now, if they're really trying to improve the schools, all right, they would have admitted, no, it's not the teachers. But since they had to save face for the people making these decisions, they had to throttle ahead with it. Okay. Now, everyone familiar with this process, including me and many others, in fact, everyone at the school, I would say,
mm-hmm.
knows that the numerous restaffing mistakes that took place really have caused John Adams to take a major step backwards.
Okay.
Now, the upcoming school year, you're going to see a lot of John Adams. Honestly, everyone has been rehired or has originally been hired, including these teachers that became bad in their eyes.
Hmm. Wow. So it wasn't just you that didn't get rehired.
Oh, no, absolutely not. In fact, I would like to talk a little bit about some of the other teachers that weren't rehired. You know, I would call all of them glaring examples.
Okay.
All right. Now, I would add that any process that led to a school losing any one of these people I'm going to talk about would have to be considered self-defeating and contrary to that school's interests.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to go, I'm going to talk about Linda Bell. Linda Bell and I started 11 years ago together. And just like me, she was not rehired. Mm-hmm. All right. Now, Linda is a glaring example because she ran two programs, one called Apex and the other called Senior Academy. All right. Now, these were very important programs. Now, if she was undesirable, why was she in charge of these programs to begin with?
Mm.
All right. But, you know, what I always remember about Linda, and we used to commute into school every once in a while, is how much she truly cared for the students. Now, one time a former student came back to school, and he was telling us about some serious health issues he was dealing with at the time. And I looked over at Linda, and there were absolute tears streaming down her face.
Well,
you know, and, you know, she's not a trained actor. I mean, this is legitimate. And I always remember she had such a high level of care and concern for the students. And not to mention the fact that she's an outstanding teacher. Another person who actually wasn't originally rehired and isn't coming back was Adam Newson. He was a dean and just an outstanding dean, another key person that is lost. One other I can mention is Alana Gallagher. She was not rehired, despite the fact that she was also a dean and really did an outstanding job. And, you know, what I always knew about Ms. Gallagher is what the students told me, all right? And basically, the students always talk about the teachers, and you could kind of throw out maybe one aberrational bad report you get about a teacher, but quite honestly, I never heard anything from a student about Ms. Gallagher that was negative. And, you know, I know how much she really cared. And if you really go with how teachers connect with the students, you would have to say that, you know, Alana Gallagher connected with the students as well, if not better than really anybody.
Hmm.
All right. Another dean who was not rehired is Mark Wilson. Now, Mark Wilson is certified in special education, and the students always loved him.
Mm-hmm.
All right. He's a military veteran. But, you know, if you spend any time with Mark Wilson, what really impresses you about this gentleman is the humility of the man.
Yeah.
All right. You realize that he's such a man of character,
mm.
the exact kind of person you would want interacting with your child if you were a parent. Somehow the selection committee overlooked that, although I couldn't imagine that they did not see that in him. Another guy definitely is a phys ed teacher named Joe McMahon. All right. Joe's a very affable, personable guy, great colleague. All right. And he really connected extremely well with the students and the fellow teachers. But, you know, what struck me about Joe is how much, again, how much he cared for the students.
Yeah.
And, you know, toward the end of the year, he came up to me and he asked me about a student that was in my class named Elijah. Now, Elijah is one of those guys that it would have been so easy not to really pay much attention to him because he was always getting suspended, didn't pass any of his classes. All right, but Joe did take a sincere interest in him, and, you know, that's so important. And it's not something that really everyone has in them. I mean, Joe was someone that really cares for people.
Yeah.
Now, Elijah actually used to come to my class more than he went to others. Now, I'd love to tell you he did all the work, and that his story had a successful ending to it. But unfortunately, it didn't. But he did actually come to class. And a lot of times he put his head down. I'm not going to lie to you. But he really never did much work. All right.
Gosh.
But I always felt, all right, at least he's out of the hallways and not disrupting other classes.
Yeah.
All right. Now, on the day of the actual global regents, Elijah was in my proctoring room. And I'm afraid he did a little bit of sleeping in there, too.
Okay.
But, you know, I was able to go over to him and convince him to give it his best shot, and he did complete most of the tests. And when he was leaving, he was handing me his papers, and I was putting them in their respective piles, and I noticed he was just still standing there.
Yeah.
And as I looked up, there was Elijah, like, holding his hand out for me to shake it.
Wow.
All right. And as we were shaking hands, we made direct eye contact with each other. And it was a moment, I think, that will always stay with me. Because I really felt that this student had total respect for me, but I also know how much affection I had for him, even though he really wasn't a model student. And,
right.
You know, I think we really reconciled any problems we may have had right there. And, you know, he never was disrespectful to me.
Yeah.
And if you look at this going forward, you know, who's going to be able to connect with Elijah next year? Maybe get him to, you know, start coming to class and taking school seriously. I know I would have had that ability to do it. And Joe McMahon certainly would have had that ability to do it.
Okay, well, what did the school have you concentrating on then?
Well, you know, it's never something as constructive as, all right, can we mentor students? You know, we did attendance mentoring, but there was always something called inquiry, you know, and I'm really going to explain what that is during the next interview. But there is one other teacher I would like to mention, and he decided not to even reapply because, quite honestly, many of us, we all did. We felt it was very demeaning that we even had to do this.
But
his name was Robert Trotter. He's an English teacher. And I remember I became familiar with him on my second year teaching. So I had a good student of mine, and they had to rearrange his schedule, and he literally had to make a choice between me and Mr. Trotter.
But,
and I had had him in my first year, and I'm actually writing about this in chapter 3 of my book. But his mother explained to me, well, he had you last year, he's going to choose Trotter. And I was a little bit taken back by it because I know I connected with the student. But then I got to know Trotter and I realized, wow, he really is an outstanding teacher. He's the faculty advisor for the school newspaper.
Yep.
Always connected very well with the students. Yet he felt he needed to be somewhere else next year because of the conditions that existed at John Adams. And he even graduated from John Adams. And
wow.
So did Alana Gallagher as well.
Wow, that's crazy. Now, you keep talking about connecting with the students, Tim. Obviously, this is very important to you.
Mike, connecting with the students is absolutely essential. In a school like John Adams, how you connect with the students is the difference between being an adequate teacher and being exceptional. Anyone can connect with the so-called good students, all right, or most people can.
Mm-hmm.
It's how you impact the ones that are unmotivated or low functioning, and that really truly makes the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Now, every person that I just mentioned is someone that connects with the more difficult students, and now John Adams goes forward with none of them in camp.
Hmm.
And it really creates a real glaring deficiency. And it should be noted, you're really not going to shake a tree full of young teaching applicants, and that's pretty much what they rehired,
right,
and adequately replace any of us. You know, there's always going to be a learning curve involved. And, hey, listen, a lot of them are going to become very good in their own right. But you're really just going to get back to where you were to begin with. And the reality is that none of us will really ever be fully replaced.
Hmm.
Now, the people I mentioned, the teachers that you build a staff around,
right,
not take away from a school that has the issues that John Adams has, but they'll look for a way to make the numbers seem as if this was a good idea, when really it was anything but.
Wow. So you feel that many of the new teachers hired will not be around for very long?
You know, they'll be getting out the first opportunity, many of them, because teaching at John Adams means that you will be degraded. All right. They all have to report back a week early to engage in professional development that's already familiar to those teachers that are returning to John Adams. So at great expense to the taxpayer, you're really getting nothing in return. All right. But it fits the profile that the politicians say, look, we're having them come in. They're going through additional professional development as if that's, you know, the so-called solution.
Mm-hmm.
But they're really addressing the misnomer that these so-called bad schools are filled to the brim with bad teachers. All right. In fact, I can speak of teachers that failed at John Adams, yet somehow became good teachers at other easier places.
Wow. So the school itself can often be a detriment.
Or determinant, actually, you know, because if you take the staff at John Adams and move them into a so-called good school, all right, and that school's not going to miss a beat, all right? A good school with John Adams staff stays a good school. Any teacher can adjust to being, you know, having better students.
Sure.
Stands to reason.
Right.
Now, take the teachers from that so-called good school and put them at John Adams. Now they would have to deal with conditions and challenges unlike any they have ever experienced before.
Hmm.
Stands to reason that many of them would have great difficulty adjusting. So why does the public accept the fact that teachers at John Adams should continue unappreciated? Don't we appreciate the cops that work in the precincts that have a higher crime rate, as opposed to those that have it easier at other places?
Yeah.
Would we think it was a good idea that the cops at a precinct with a high crime rate have to go through additional training when the very course of doing their job on a daily basis provides inherent training and makes them better in and by itself.
That makes absolute sense. Well, now in reading chapter one of your blog, I understand that it was very difficult for you to deal with issues related to you not being rehired.
Mike, there's a multitude of things. And as I go through this, I realize more and more it's not about me. It's really about bigger things. But I'll never forget the pain in my students' faces, the confusion, the disbelief on May 23rd when I told them I was not going to be back. Now, at first, they really didn't even believe me. They thought I was kidding around. But then when I was able to convince them that, no, they didn't rehire me, there was such confusion among them because they saw me for 9 months at that point. Mm. They saw how hard I worked, how committed I was to them. Yeah. And yet all this resulted in me being deemed expendable.
Wow.
All right. Now they certainly knew a mistake had been made. All right. And after the confusion was over, then came the anger. And I'll never forget the look on their faces for as long as I live. And I didn't write about it yet in the first chapter of my book, just because the raw and unedited versions of chapter one and two have been posted in my blog doesn't mean I'm done with those chapters. But there was something else that was really evident that day. All right. And it certainly will be in chapter one when I write again about it. The students had a lot of anger and they wanted to find out who was responsible for the decision.
Okay.
So I told them who was on the rehiring committee. And they reacted when I mentioned the principal.
Hmm.
Now, as I'm talking about the principal, all right, it became evident that almost half the students didn't know who he was.
Wow.
Half the students on May 23rd of their sophomore year couldn't conjure up an image of their principal. They couldn't pick him out of a police lineup if they had to. So we talked about connections before. Well, how well did the principal connect with the students if they don't even know who he was?
Wow.
And I started thinking back to all the faculty meetings we had in 4 years that Daniel Scanlon was principal. And I realized, all right, he used to talk about, a program called PBIS where we reward positive behavior. But he always used to refer to the students in terms of their data. All right. Not, them as people, but them as data.
Wow.
And he always talked about how John Adams lives and dies by its data.
Wow.
So it appeared that to him, the students were nothing more but walking toward a Danamatons. In fact, just before we all had the interview, the students got to take a survey about their teachers. Now, I ask this, why wasn't that factored into the rehiring process? All right.
Well, yes.
Now, one thing we all teachers will tell you, the students are pretty good judge of a teacher's overall effectiveness. All right. So why wasn't that a factor if they're the most important component of what we're doing?
Right. You mentioned something before about the numbers. Can they be relied upon going forward, in your opinion?
That's highly questionable. It's certainly in the best interest of both parties involved, and I'm talking about politicians and administrators, to make the numbers look good.
Ugh.
Since they did this major overhaul. But things are constantly going on that don't seem to pass the smell test.
Such as what, Jim?
Well, you see seniors that are in line to graduate, they're a couple of credits short, and then you look at their transcript, and you see that they achieved credits, and the teachers on their transcripts were not teachers that even taught that specific course, nor were they even licensed in that course.
Mm-hmm.
And I can even talk about a student, I hate to even say it, but a student I had this year, and I had him in my first period class. All right, and all year, in second semester, I had him all year, but the class was designed for him to pass the global regions.
Okay.
Then all of a sudden, in late April, he comes to me and he goes, well, turns out I don't have to take the global regions. And I said, why? And he said that a guidance counselor had said that they're going to take points from another regions and put it towards the global regions. He was a special needs student, so he needed to get up to a 55.
Right.
All right, I said, are you sure? And he said, again, that's what he had been told, that they're going to take points from another test and put it towards the global regions, which I had never heard before. So I asked the guidance counselor, and they denied ever telling him that. So I went back to the student and told him, you better go back to that guidance counselor. You need to be here and I was very upset because I was making such good progress with the students, and he was gaining confidence. I really thought, you know, he could make it, and I thought that would give him a sense of achievement. So he came back and he said he talked to the guidance counselor again, and they told him the same thing again. So he just stopped coming to class. And when I asked the guidance counselor again, I said, "You sure?" And again, they said, "Oh no, he has to take the global regions." But what makes this highly suspicious is that student was never even scheduled to take the global regions. So she's telling me one thing, but it seemed like something else certainly was taking place. So what happened between late January to late April to change things? How did this requirement manage to disappear? Well, let's face it, guidance counselors don't do these things on their own. All right, this had to come from above.
It definitely sounds suspicious. You know, we never really talked about your book either.
Well, Mike, as I said, as I go along with this process, you know, I realize it's less about my teaching career than what I observed during my teaching career. That's what I'm going to be writing about. As difficult as it is to get this written, not being a professional writer by any stretch, I'm going to be writing this book, all right? If I have to self-publish it on Amazon, I'm going to do it, all right? If I have to hire a skywriter at the beach to get this message out, I'll do it. If I have to spend $50,000 of my own money, I'll do it, all right? The public, the taxpayer, they all have the right to know exactly what is going on.
Wow. Oh, okay. And we have another interview scheduled in a week. Is that okay? Maybe we can get one in a week.
Sure. I have a lot more to say. All right.
Well, that's good. But we're out of time right now. Please forgive me. Thanks so much for all the insight. We all look forward to the next interview with you, Jim.
Oh, as I do, Mike. Thank you very much.